Welcome to Limitless, the Bland Beginnings podcast where seeing things differently inspires limitless possibilities. This podcast is being brought to you by Blind Beginnings, an organization based in Vancouver, Canada, that supports children and youth who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families. Limitless was created in order to inform, educate, entertain, and share stories from within the blind and partially sighted community, in order to show the world that the opportunities for those who are blind or partially sighted are truly limitless. And now, it is my pleasure to introduce you to your host, the executive director and founder of Blind Beginnings, Sean Marcellet.
Welcome to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet, and I'm so excited about today's episode. This episode is really for parents of children who are blind or partially sighted. And I'm really excited to welcome our guests today who happen to both be parents with children who are blind. And so welcome Maria and Candace.
Hello.
Thanks.
So I've invited Maria and Candace here today specifically because I want to talk a little bit about our upcoming Seeing Things Differently parent support group, which is running in March, starting in March. And it's a support group for parents who are raising children who are blind or partially sighted. It's a 6-week group. And I think it's pretty beneficial, but both Maria and Candace participated in the group over the last few years. And I thought that, you know, hearing it from them would be a little more impactful than me just talking about the group myself. So I'm really grateful that you guys are here. Do you want to maybe introduce yourselves and your child's vision situation and tell our listeners a little bit about you? Maria, do you want to go first?
Sure, I'll go first. My name is Maria. I have 3 children, ages 8, 5, and 1, let's say, almost 1. So it's my 8-year-old that has the visual impairment. She was born with an optic pathway brain tumor. And so when she was born, she had some vision, but over time, she lost all of it. And so from the age of about 1.5, she has been completely blind with no light perception.
And what about you, Candace?
Yes. So I have 2 boys. Cassius is 2.5, and my youngest is just over 1. And Cassius is one with a visual impairment. He was born totally healthy. Everything was great. And then about 2 weeks, right when we brought him home, he suffered a stroke. We noticed he was having seizures. I really didn't know what it was. I thought it was twitching. We brought him to our closest hospital here. And immediately the pediatrician that was on staff at ER rushed us to Children's, and then from there we saw every single doctor you can imagine. We didn't know what was happening. We thought he might have a limited lifespan, and then with all these doctors that were going through, one of the doctors, the ophthalmologist, said, well, I think it looks like he has a retinal coloboma. And I didn't know what that was. He drew us a diagram, and I think just with all the doctors I just collapsed, and I just was worried because that was one of the minor issues, but it was hitting me pretty hard because we didn't know what his quality of life was. Since then, yeah, he's actually surpassed a lot of the expectations from the doctors, but that's the one thing that we have so far. He's overcome a lot of his issues, and the one thing that he still has is the retinal coloboma.
So you mentioned that was kind of one of the things that hit you the hardest. And I wanted to ask you guys about that. Like, what was it like when you first found out your child had a visual impairment? How did you feel in that moment? And maybe like, what was your perception of visual impairment before that moment?
Mm-hmm. I felt that he would not be developed. He wouldn't develop, I guess, as quickly or as normally, or I don't even know what the normal is, but that he would not develop properly in terms of his fine motor skills, his large motor skills. How would he learn? Just very ignorant things that I was thinking in my head. Just, I was immediately scared. He wouldn't know what we would look like. How would he know his mom is with him, that he would not feel scared? And yeah, I was just more worried about him being alone.
What about you, Maria?
Yeah, kind of similar. I think when similar to Candace's scenario, like when we first found out about the vision loss, it was in conjunction with a pretty traumatic other medical event. So, you know, there was all that to worry about. And then there was this other piece, which was the big unknown of what does this mean? And I think similar to a lot of people, I didn't really know anyone when I was growing up or even as an adult, I didn't know anybody that was visually impaired. And so I think the biggest thing was just all these questions of what is their future going to be like? What will they be able to do? Is their life limited? And I think for us in particular, there were questions that were specific to the fact that, you know, we had a daughter because, I don't know, I just like had all these questions about like her safety when she grows up and how is she going to be able to be in the world and be safe? And socially, how is school going to be for her? Because, you know, I had the experience of going through school as a girl and there are unique social things about your adolescence as a girl. So I had all these questions. Mm-hmm. I just didn't know even where to begin with those. And that was probably the biggest thing, was like the fear of the unknown.
How did you first hear about Blind Beginnings?
For us, so when we first found out about Alina's blindness, we kind of told people in our close network, like our friends, we told some coworkers about that. And I think it was my husband's coworker that just happened to know about Blind Beginnings. I don't know how. And she suggested that we look into it. And when we looked it up, we were like, oh, this is perfect. This is exactly tailored to our situation. So that's how we found out about it.
Well, mine is very serendipitous. Like, I found it through Facebook. I'm friends with you, Sean. We've known each other from 10 years ago when we were in Toastmasters together. And you posted volunteers to help with the fundraising gala. And you know, it's funny because when we were at the hospital, they gave us all these resources. They said the psychologist told us to go, you know, actually find out ourselves, like other parent support groups. And Blind Beginnings wasn't one of them. He said, well, once you do your research, go online, Google. And I remember thinking, like, where would I even start to find parent support groups? And why would I want to talk to other parents when I can't even cope with myself, with our scenario and our internal family? And how would I talk to other people? So it was nice. And when I saw that, it was almost like, felt like it was very, serendipitous. It was right in front of me. And I said, okay, I'm just going to jump to see how I can help. And hopefully I'll meet someone that has a child similar to Cassius. And then one day Cassius can be friends with them.
Yeah, it's so Candace and I were in the same Toastmasters club like a lifetime ago, it feels like. I was curious if having met me, like knowing, because we weren't close, like we didn't really keep in touch beyond Facebook, but just knowing somebody who was blind, who was, I don't know, if I, semi-professional. I don't really think of myself as professional even still. Did that help with like your perception of what this might, did you make the connection to Cassius's vision at all?
Absolutely. I thought, actually, I didn't know your extent, your history of your blindness. So I actually didn't know you were completely blind. You could see. Mm-hmm. I thought you could see a little bit. So when I learned more about it, and I read up online in your bio, and I thought, this is something that Cassius can learn from you. And I just imagine other kids would be part of this organization. So yeah, it did give me confidence knowing that.
Yeah. Sure. I think it makes a difference if you've never known anybody who's blind, even for myself, like just because you're visually impaired doesn't mean you don't have your own biases about what that means. And, you know, as a teenager, my idea of blindness was definitely based on what I knew from the media, not based on any real actual person that I knew. So sometimes that gives you a much more negative impression of blindness than if you actually know somebody. So when you heard there was a support group for parents of blind children, blind and partially sighted children, how did you, like, were you excited? Were you apprehensive? Were you, you know, everybody has different sort of feelings about support groups.
I was definitely apprehensive. I had never done anything like that before, not even for myself. Like, I'd never done any sort of counseling in my life. And I think, I mean, now I'm generally much more open. I think, you know, as a society, we're moving closer towards accepting mental health as an important part of our life. But at that time, that wasn't front and center yet. And so I think I have to admit there was a bit of a stigma for me. Like, if I have to go talk to somebody about this issue, then clearly I don't have my life under control. And so there was that aspect. Then there was also the aspect of like, okay, so these other parents have a child who is visually impaired, but what else will we have in common? How will I connect with these people, you know, in these sessions over some length of time we've never met before? And also like the worry about sharing really personal things with people that I haven't met. I mean, I'm a fairly open person, but still that was a bit of a barrier for me. And so I had a lot of apprehensions, but I think, you know, in retrospect, I'm so glad that I took what seemed like a risk at the time, because it really was valuable. And at the end of the day, like now I can say, yeah, it was a good decision. But going into it, I was definitely a bit apprehensive and not really sure if it was right for me. And also, I wasn't, as much as I wasn't sure if it was right for me, I was even more concerned that it wouldn't be right for my husband, because we were going to do it together, just because he's a bit more reserved and private about things. And like generally, even in our relationship, I'm always the one that's sharing the feelings and he's not doing that as frequently. So yeah, I was kind of like worried for myself, but also like, how is he going to do with this? So that was the feeling going in.
What about you, Candace?
Yeah, very similar. I think we actually went to a counselor before. It was recommended by the psychologist. And so we went to this counselor and she listened a lot. We shared a lot. And then in this weird way, like in my perception, I felt like she felt really, it was more pity. I didn't feel like she was there to support. So I was embarrassed sharing almost too much with a stranger. And I thought to myself, okay, so we only went to her once and we didn't end up going back. And so that same feeling kind of rushed into me when I thought about the parent support group. Like, what if Cassius is the worst out of everybody? Now they're going to really feel bad for us. And now I would have to consult them. So that was kind of what I was thinking about, which is, just you know, because I didn't know what I was getting, we were getting into. And same thing, Jagger's very private and he is very outgoing, but very private in terms of what was happening. He's very protective over Cassius. So he just didn't want to share something that was private, but also we didn't know what was happening. And to have people, again, like just judge us and feel bad for our situation. Because that was kind of like our world, was that we were the only like family that was to have a visually impaired child. And so people would just come at us with just like lots of questions and just lots of sad looks. And we just didn't want to have to deal with that in the parent support group.
Yeah. So when you think back to the group, Maria, it was like quite a few years ago, Candace, not quite so many years ago, but like, what was that first meeting like? What do you remember about that?
The first meeting was really, really good. And I think it got us comfortable because I remember there being kind of a routine to it. So when you start off, you have kind of the things you talk about in the beginning, and then you get into a topic, and then you kind of check in at the end. And I felt like that structure was, it helped to put us at ease about how things were going to go. So I really enjoyed that first session because it got me comfortable with what the routine was going to be when we met for these sessions. But then the other thing that was really interesting was in our very first session, you know, we met the other families that were there, and there was another family that had a very similar situation to us in that they had a daughter about the same age, and she also had a brain tumor that had caused the vision loss. And we were so shocked. We couldn't believe, I mean, it's very unfortunate to be in that scenario, but then it's really fortunate to find somebody that that really understands so deeply what you're going through. And it's such a rare thing that it's really difficult to find. So I think for us, that was such a big icebreaker. Like when we met that other family and we knew that instantly, we knew that there was somebody that could relate to what we were going through. It was really helpful.
Oh, I've got it. I've got goosebumps. Cause yeah, that I know how special that is when that happens. It's so great. What do you remember, Candace?
I remember walking in and I didn't realize there was going to be three or four other families like us, and they were all young. I don't know why I was expecting older people. I was expecting like older psychologists in the room, but everybody were families with young kids like us. And so that was nice knowing that we were going through the same kind of life milestones with our kids together. So we would have the same questions. And I did remember one of the moms that was there, she had a 9-year-old boy. And that was nice having her there because she shared a lot of the things that she went through and overcame. So that gave us reassurance. The structure was really nice. We walked, I remember, so there's six sessions. We would walking in the beginning of the meeting, we would have some nice light snacks and we'd talk about what we were feeling at that moment, which was nice because it's not like we had to, okay, we have to come here with a pre-planned answer and just kind of go with, so that people we're not going to put people behind because we're talking too much about this particular emotion. Everybody didn't feel like there was any sort of a rush. Yeah. And also there's two other fathers there that Jagger instantly felt at ease because they were just laughing and cracking jokes before the session started. So yeah, it was nice.
So this is something I personally think that the fact that I'm blind myself and supporting parents is for the most part a positive. But I also appreciate that it might also be uncomfortable to say how you feel about your child's blindness if it is negative to somebody who is blind. So I'm just curious if you guys can speak to that. Like, what was it like? I know for Maria, when you went through, both of the counselors facilitating the group had a visual impairment. When Candace went through, it was myself and a sighted counselor, but just curious about that.
You know, it's an interesting question because that particular thought was not running through our minds. Like, I think we were there looking for positivity. And what Candace mentioned earlier about, you know, going to talk to somebody and they didn't really have a lot of experience with it. So then she felt maybe like they were pitying her or kind of like, oh, they're there. I think that we came because we didn't want that. We wanted something to bring us out of that because we realized that it was not serving us and it wasn't helpful to our child. And we were looking for something that was constructive and not just like a pity party, I guess. And so I don't think that we wanted to say anything that was like, oh, I think something negative about it. But at the same time, I think we felt open to share our worries and things that we were afraid of and questions that we had, you know, that we thought, oh, this is a stupid question, but like, how does a blind person do this? And all of those things we were very comfortable talking about because of the way that the counselors sort of introduced themselves and made us feel like it was an open space with very little judgment. So you could ask those kinds of questions and people did ask things like without going into specifics. You know, I remember people asking stuff that probably now in retrospect and to a person who has been blind is like, oh, that's a silly question, but it was never treated that way. It was like, yeah, that's something that probably a lot of people wonder. And, you know, here's how I've experienced it. So I think that it was a good balance of a positive environment, but also an environment where you could feel free to ask questions and share your feelings of worry and concern or just confusion about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I think I wanted you there. And I wanted someone that had a perspective where there would be, someone like I could ask you questions and you would be able to answer from your experience and say like, yeah, this is normal, or yes, that's common for you to think that way or for a person with visual impairment to react that way. It gave us your perspective, and I needed that. I needed someone who's been through it, who's living and thriving in life, and knowing that we can get through whatever we're getting through right now at that moment with Cassius. Yeah.
Well, that's a relief. It is something I worry a little bit about. I do think I'm in a unique position to support, but then I, you know, wonder about if somebody is worried about offending me, then they're going to have a harder time relaxing and being open and just feeling comfortable. So,
well, here's the thing about that, Sean. It's like also what Candace said about kind of being the only person and all the people around you not really understanding is all those things that you wouldn't feel comfortable saying to a person who is blind. Like, those things were already coming at us from people in our lives, right? People were sometimes saying things that maybe were not well informed, or just like negative things about their fears for our child, family members, or just people that we were talking to. So I guess, like, if there was somebody that I wanted to express my feelings to that was not visually impaired, there's lots of people out there that you can, you know, right, rely on in that way. Like, that was not something that was missing. What was missing was your perspective that mm-hmm. would, like, hopefully lead us into a different direction than what kind of the mainstream thought process was that we were part of.
So Maria, you mentioned a little bit, you know, you were worried about your husband and how he would feel in a support group. And yeah, I think, you know, to have, I'm just, I guess, curious about the dads and was the group beneficial to them? Or what were their thoughts, if you're comfortable to share, on their behalf?
Yeah, for sure. As I mentioned, you know, he's not as open about his thoughts and feelings. So I guess I don't really know 100% how he felt about it. But having said that, I think that the fact that he was keen to come back every time, you know, even though, like, after the session, we'd get in the car and we didn't really talk in depth about it the way I would maybe with someone else, like, you know, my mom or friend. Like, I think we kind of would go home and not really talk about it as much. But then every following week, I think he was really keen to go back and that it was beneficial to him. And I think what Candace mentioned about, you know, like walking into the room and you see a couple other dads, I think that helped him feel comfortable because there were different types of people in the group, right? There were people that share a lot and were very open, and there were kind of the people that were more reserved. And so having some other dads and their perspective in the room, I think made him feel more comfortable with sharing his feelings as well. And the other thing that was really great was at a certain point, you know, everybody kind of got more comfortable with each other, like kind of after the third or fourth session, and people started providing support to each other. Like, it stopped being just us answering the questions of the facilitators, and it started to become more of a conversation between people. And I remember one of the other dads that was kind of a quiet guy himself, you know, saying to my husband, you know, I think you're doing a really great job, and you're the kind of dad that is a role model for me. Like, I want to be more like you and do things more in the way that you're doing them. And it was in the context of, like, you know, their child was younger. And so we had shared our experience about going through certain stages of development. And I guess this dad was like, oh, like, I like the way that this guy's doing things. And that was, I think, really huge for my husband because, you know, he wants to know that he's doing the best that he can as a parent. And nothing is more assuring than having another parent say, you know what, you're doing fine. Like, you're doing really well. And I think that you're a great dad. And having that come from another dad was really great, as opposed to, you know, the facilitator or me or whoever. So I think as time went on, he kind of warmed up to the whole thing, and it was beneficial. And I, like, my advice to people would be, to the extent that you can come as a pair, if you have a partner, whoever that partner is, I think it's a great thing to do as a pair together.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think what was also really nice is that you had childcare at the counseling session. So it was nice. So we had that almost that moment right for us both, Jagger and I, to talk about things that we weren't able to even find time to talk about it during our day because we're so exhausted. So being able to share that with a group was nice, but also with just between us and knowing what he's going through. And the one thing that he brought up and I thought was so interesting is that he said this, I think, after the first session, he said the impact this will have beyond just us as a family. It's like, it's going to reach our parents who had lots of questions, who were scared, our friends, like strangers in the park talking to us and asking questions about CASAS. It's going to be beyond just us. It's like, we're going to have this counseling session is going to have an impact to the wider community, which we felt that. We felt we were more confident. We felt more at ease talking about it more openly. We weren't shy or ashamed to talk about it. In fact, we were welcoming, like, ask us what's wrong. I know you're looking at our son. Just please, like, feel free to talk to us. Feel free to ask us questions. And I think that was really what was really a big impact for us, is that, like, we were able to see the positivity of us sharing, learning, and normalizing this conversation. Like, it's not like, okay, we will only talk about this here in the session, and then that's it with the other families. We can now talk about it beyond, like I said, to strangers, perfect strangers who would ask us random questions, almost too upfront about it. But we were ready. We were starting to feel more comfortable doing that. Actually, Jack just walked in.
Okay.
We can include him. One second.
Sure.
It's Jagger.
Hi.
Hi, Jagger. Welcome.
Us or me.
Hi.
How timely. I was just asking about how the dads, we're talking about the parent support group. I think you know that. I was just asking about how this was for the dads. And, like, you know, I'm being a little bit gender stereotyping, but I feel like maybe women are more likely to open up and talk about their feelings, where men, maybe that's not as common. So are you comfortable to tell us how the support group was for you?
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I thought it was, well, first off, I thought it was very well done. The way you organized it with the group, a small group of people, the way we had an expert in there as well to help, a counseling expert, that was very nice, almost a moderator. And then you were there as well with your experience that was moderating it too. And the whole thing created like a super comfortable environment. So yeah, that was nice.
Awesome.
You were apprehensive beforehand.
I didn't want to be a part of it. No, 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 no. Okay. Like, I mean, Candace has a million things that always on our plate. So whenever she's like, hey, I want to do this, I want to do that. It's like, okay, yeah, let's do that. And then I end up just getting roped into it. And then I end up liking it. So there's always a bit of a win.
That's funny.
But I gotta say, like, the moment you walk into a room, just personally speaking, the moment I walk into a room and I see a group of people in a circle, I'm just like, oh God, what's next?
Yes, we did sit in a circle.
The circle was fun. It was a circle of love.
Well, I think I appreciate your honesty, because it almost is more impactful to hear somebody say, I wasn't really keen to do this, but I got, you know, became comfortable and am glad that I did in the long run. So,
yeah, like, well, it really helped that, like, it helped that you were there to break the ice. The other counselor was super helpful. And then everyone brings their own little spice to it. You know, like, you had a couple of parents who were very open and they really broke the ice. And, you know, a couple of dads who are really cool. And it just kind of, you kind of create your own family and your own, like, you know, group out of that whole experience. And we got to meet once a week for how long? I forget.
6 weeks.
6 weeks. Yeah. So by the end of it, we're like one big group. We don't want to leave each other. And that's like, you know, that's pretty cool.
Yeah. That is.
That sounds cool. I'm kind of jealous that I'm like, oh, I'm not in their clique. It sounds like a fun crew.
It worked out that there was, yeah, three families that all had kids under two. And it just worked out that there was one mom with an older child. So I think she maybe felt a little bit like this was not you know, she was past that, but then she was able to offer her experience. I don't always have control over, it just fluked out that happened. But then Maria, in your group, you met some people with a really similar situation to yours as well, which was a fluke as well. So, you know, you never know who you're going to meet. It would be ideal if it was always like, oh, everybody's kid has the same eye condition. Unfortunately, it doesn't always work out like that. But
I think it's good to have a bit of variety, because like ours was a bit more of a spread in terms of the age of the kids. Like there was a really young baby or like just mm-hmm. toddler, I guess. And then we had a 2-year-old. And then I think, if I remember correctly, the oldest was something like 9 maybe. And it was kind of interesting to have that spread. Even though, yeah, like it would have been cool to have kids all the same age and the same condition. But when you have that spread of age, you sort of get the advantage of seeing a little bit ahead, you know, and then the person who's a little bit ahead of you always inevitably reassures you that, you know, yeah, this might be challenging, but here's what we did to overcome it. And we did overcome it. And then you feel better about that. And then as now, I guess I'm more often the person with the older child in a lot of situations. And it's actually really beneficial for me too, because, okay, so the people are slightly behind in age, but it sort of makes me think back to when we were in that phase and how scared or, you know, uncertain we were. And then I think to how well we've done and how well our daughter has done. And that makes me feel reassured as well. So I think it's good to have a bit of a spread sometimes.
Yeah. And I also think it's a good point to make that it doesn't matter how old your child is. You may still be grieving their visual impairment, and it's never too late to kind of get some support around that. So there have been parents that have gone through the group with teenagers as well. And I think it's different, you know, you're not in that early, like early diagnosis kind of holy doodle. but it doesn't mean that you don't still have a lot of feelings around it that you haven't been able to talk about with somebody who really understands. So it's a group for all ages.
It takes, what is it? I want to say persistence, but I mean, let's face it, like coming to a group at 7 o'clock at night, after a long day's work and maybe even just being with your kids all day at home, it's not easy, right? So it does take work on everyone's end, and it actually really does go to help a bigger picture, you know? So it might help you, but it also might help another family too. So if there's someone that's like kind of wavering, should I do it? Should I not do it? It's commitment. Like it's definitely commitment, but you get a lot out of it and you can give a lot out of it too.
Yeah. Thank you. And just before you joined us, Candace was talking about how you had actually made the point during the group, how this was going to impact like your extended family and strangers and the way you could respond to questions from people about your son's vision. And I wanted to say that that's always a topic for at least one session, is how to respond to people's questions or stares or, you know, unasked for whatever. So that is always something that parents need to talk about. And it's a lifelong thing. When you are blind, when you have a child that's blind, there's always going to be people that are going to, you know, out of the blue, ask you something about the vision that catches you off guard. So I feel like learning how to respond to that is the earlier, the better.
Yeah, that was a huge benefit, that one. Cause right when we started talking about those things, that was the time when we were taking Cassius to the park and little kids were saying, what's wrong with his eyes? Why does he look, you know, why does he look like this? Why does he look that? And yeah, Sometimes you're just stumped. You just don't know what to say.
So how do you feel the group benefited you? If you look back now, like, are there ways, specific ways that you feel it benefited you or helped you?
I gave confidence for sure. Like, yeah, I gave confidence in how we can work with Cassius, how we can respond to people with that have questions about Cassius, how.
I think I'll give an example. What helped was that Cassius had to go through an MRI And I was really nervous about it because he had to be put under, and I just didn't know what that felt like. I was just really, really scared, and I had a bit of anxiety. So I connected with one of the moms from our parents' support group through Facebook, and I just said, hi, I know that one of she has twins. One of your sons had to go through an MRI scan. What was it like? And can you just give me a little bit of like just a background, how what you went through and how did he handle it? And she called me up like an hour later, and we talked about it over the phone, and just that was nice, just to be able to call on someone and say, hey, now my child's going through this. I know you went through it. What was it like? And that was nice. That was nice.
So kind of developing that network of support.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about you, Maria?
Yeah, I'm sort of with you, Jagger. Like, this is such a deep question. There's like so many things running through my mind, but I think, it goes back to the point of like coming into it and having all these worries about the unknown. Mm-hmm. So you just have all these questions. And when you come in and you start talking through some of these things, in six sessions, you're not going to get the answer to everything. And there's questions that you're going to have later that you didn't think of at the time. But what it sort of helped me do was reach the point where I was no longer like scrambling, thinking that there are no answers to anything. I'm so lost. It got me to a place where I was like, okay, this is the situation that we're in. And there are other people going through this situation. And there are people who have already gone through it. There are professionals who can answer questions. So I may not know everything that I need to know right now. And I may have, you know, problems in the future or questions in the future, but I'm not so lost in that. I'm not in such despair, I guess. Like, honestly, if I were to be 100% honest, I went into it in a bit of despair, and I came out not on top of the world, not feeling like I had everything figured out. I just was not in that despair anymore. I was in a zone where I felt like things were going to happen. There were going to be more questions to come. There were going to be more things for my child to deal with and overcome. But I felt comfortable that I could figure it out. And if I couldn't figure it out, I would find somebody to help me.
100%.
I want to say to that, Maria, like, I think a part of what you were saying about like seeing other people go through it, and we're going through it together, and having that, like, we're in a similar situation, but with a knowing that they're doing it in a way that's like, this is part of her life now. We've accepted it. There's that acceptance, and we're just gonna live our life the way it is now. So it just it gave me hope, and it just also didn't feel like I was in this cloud. I was numb for about the whole first year of Cassius's life. I just felt like I wasn't feeling anything, because I didn't give myself permission to feel anything. I didn't even want to even think about his future, because I didn't think that was too luxurious for me to think that way. But it came to a place, I think, eventually, like after we went through the sessions and just having go through a lot of this growth, it's that this is now our life. We're accepting it, and we're growing from it. And we will continue to grow from it.
That's great. Yeah. And it's not a magic 6 weeks and you're just going to like leave with the most positive view of blindness. But even if it shifts things a little bit, it's hopefully going to point you in the right direction. Do you feel like you've been better able to support your child, or maybe see their gifts or anything like that?
There are moments where we see him every day. So that you see, I've gone past it. Like it's not even a reminder anymore. I don't even notice it anymore. And it sounds awful to say, but it's just, that's who he is.
Mm-hmm.
It is a gift.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
It doesn't sound awful to say. I mean, I don't think about the fact that I'm blind, especially when I'm at home. It's when you go out in the world and then somebody kind of reminds you. Yeah.
That's what I guess I'm most afraid of in the future, is Cassius getting reminded of what he has, or what his, I don't know, what someone might perceive as an inability. That's kind of what I worry about now for him. And, but then I'm like, you know, that'll time will come, and it might not be bad, and it might be amazing. And there's ways that I can do it with, and Candace can do it to help him be like an awesome little guy and be happy and make friends and then make lasting relationships and just live his life to the fullest. So
yeah, that's certainly a concern, a natural concern. I think the more we can build kids up and remind them of all the things they are capable of doing rather than focusing on the things they're not. So then when somebody does point it out, you can be like, well, sure, I can't drive, but I'm really good at whatever this other thing. Right.
I think Sean, this is a message that you put forward very frequently. And I think it bears repeating every single time because we all need to be reminded of this. You often say everyone has limits, but the problem is when other people try to set those limits for you. And I think when, you know, hearing you say that several times, when I first got to know you and we joined the support group, that has been something that I just, always keep reminding myself because it's true. We all have limits. Like I'm 5'4" soaking wet. I'm just never going to be a NBA basketball player. Like It's never going to happen. And there's lots of other things that I'm terrible at crochet or whatever, like not that that's a big deal, but you know, we all have limits and things that we're not so good at. And then we have things that we excel at. And, the important thing is for us as individuals to be the ones that determine what matters, right? Like at the end of the day, I want to raise my daughter to know that, okay, so she can't drive, but it doesn't matter because it doesn't matter to her. She can do whatever else that she wants to do. No problem. So that message I think is something that was really hammered home in the early days, going through the support group and kind of, going to other Blind Beginnings events was like, look, everybody's got limits. Everybody, whether it's a visual impairment or something else, or just us as human beings, that's the human condition is we all have limits. And so the fact that, we were so fixated on this limit of being visually impaired when really there's all kinds of other limits out there, that was really helpful for us.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And also wanted to mention is that I think it was like the second session that was one of the topics is like just parent care, taking care of us as parents, because you get so caught up taking care, being the caregiver, that you forget to take care of yourself and each other. As parents, and I think that was really important because you get burnt out, and then that just trickles down to how you take care of your children and just everything in all aspects of your life. I think, and just finding just simple things and simple ways of taking care of yourself for the day. Maybe it's just like 15 minutes of just having your coffee in the morning, waking up a little bit earlier to do that. And if that's your way of just taking care of yourself, then do it.
Your group, especially the self-care, was a big with new parents. I think all parents probably need some self-care. Well, all of us need self-care, not probably. But in those early days, I remember that. That was tough. So yes, that was an important message. If you could give advice to parents who are maybe back where you were before the support group, kind of in those early days, or maybe not in those early days, but still really, really having a hard time with the fact that their child has a visual impairment, what advice would you have?
So I think that you brought something up earlier, Sean, and this is probably what I would share as like my piece of advice, is that it's important to work through all of your feelings, the negative and the worry and all that stuff. I think that as parents, we often feel like we have to be the brave ones that are always in a positive zone. And I think especially for me as a mom, I don't think this isn't necessarily 100% true for all families, but I talk to my other mom friends and we're always like, why does the mom always have to be the happy face of the family? Like everybody's in a crummy mood and I'm the one that's like chipper and, oh, let's go do something fun. And so I think for me personally, especially, I felt this pressure to just put on a brave face and not express that I was upset or that I was grieving. Essentially, you know, what you're talking about is this process of grieving and accepting the loss of this life that you had imagined for yourself and your child. Yes. And so my advice would be that it is a completely legitimate thing to grieve. So you should find an environment, whether it's the support group or whether it's another counselor that maybe you feel comfortable with, or just a friend or a family member or somebody that you can talk to, or journaling, you know, whatever it is that allows you to express those feelings, to process that grief, because you can only hold on for so long before you break. It's a lot. It's too much to just always be like, no, everything's okay. We're handling things. We have a plan. And, you know, especially when you have a child that maybe has like medical needs, you're always like running from one appointment to the next, especially in the early days, right? Like you probably have a lot of doctor's appointments or physio and OT and those types of things. And it's easy to just be like busy and not noticing the things that are going on inside of you. So I would say my advice is it's legitimate to grieve. It doesn't make you a bad person. In fact, you will be better able to serve your children and your family and yourself if you go through that process of dealing with those emotions.
I would totally, that's well said, Maria, totally, exactly. I think I went through that for, like I said, the first year of Cassius's life, and I think I broke probably like about a year later. And then what helped me was that Jagger took a lot of photos. Even the moments where I didn't want to take the photos, we were in the hospital, or just moments where I wasn't in a good mood, or we were kind of in a kind of a dark time. He took photos, and I remember looking over through those photos and going through it, and the emotion started to rise up again. And it was nice to look at them again, to say like, we went through it, we survived. And now we're here now in a brighter spot because we've gone through it and we're still going through it. But it's important to reflect back and just know that this is something that happened, and it's tough, and it's not, no one can, you know, I hate when people say this. This is the one thing I didn't like people saying, oh, you know, the universe gives you what you can handle. It's like, well, guess what? I think anybody would handle it just like us, or, you know, you would have to deal with it one way or the other. So, you know, you're tougher for it, but at the same time, you're also human. You're okay to have like sad moments or like, you know, why me moments, and that's okay. It's normal. It's part of grief, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It was helpful, Sean, that in the support group, like one of the themes was acknowledging that we have arrived in a place where we did not plan to be. And I think acknowledging that was helpful in opening up the conversation, because especially coming from you, who is visually impaired, and in our group, the other counselor also was. So I think that was actually, you know, going back to your original question before of like, how did you feel talking to somebody about your concerns, you know, in regards to blindness with somebody who is, and whether you were going to say something that, you know, might be offensive or whatever. Well, I think right away you guys were good at saying, hey, we all know that like this isn't the plan that you had in mind when you found out that you were going to have this baby. This is not necessarily what you had planned. It's probably not what you had planned at all. And so it's okay. Like let's talk about that, like how that feels now to be in this other spot.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean you don't love your child, but it's not what you expected, and you need to think about that, talk about that, accept that. Yeah. Yeah, it's a big part of the group.
Well, one thing I'm super lucky is I have a good support network. And I think any advice for parents who might not have a good support network or might not have people they can turn to is you have to communicate with people. You have to share your feelings about it, or otherwise it'll eat you up. And that's another reason why this group has been so important. But even just like, you know, it's tough for some people to really open up. Like it's tough, especially for men. And you have to do it. You just, it'll destroy you inside with worry and anxiety if you don't have a chance to like just lay it out, even if it's not relevant or you feel like it's like maybe too much, but you got to do it. That's why I would highly recommend just being a part of Blind Beginnings or any sort of organization that supports your kids' needs. I have like cousins and brothers and moms and dads, and I can vent my heart like galore, right? So it's no big deal for me. But some people don't have that, right? And that's when I would say you really have to get a community network together.
This has been fabulous. I wanted to say that our next Seeing Things Differently parent support group will be virtual. So we haven't actually run the group virtually before, but it will be through Zoom. And it starts March 2nd. So registration is now open. We only take a maximum of 8 parents per group. We don't want it to be too big because we want to make sure that everybody has enough space and time to share. And it is a closed group, so the expectation is that you sign up for the whole 6 weeks and that you attend all the sessions. Of course, we all understand that things happen, but that you sort of start off expecting that you're going to be at all of the sessions because each kind of builds on the one before, but also it builds trust in the group. You get to know the other parents. And, you know, when you see the same people every week, week after week, you really build that stronger support and relationship with them. And then you feel more comfortable to share. So I urge you to sign up, email Emily at blindbeginnings.ca. I think these parents would back me up and agree that it will be beneficial and it'll help.
Mm-hmm.
Yes,
definitely. 100%. You have our
thank you.
Yeah,
do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much to all of you for joining me today. I really, really appreciate you being so open about your experience. I understand, you know, it's a really personal topic. So I really thank you so much for being willing to talk about this on the podcast.
My pleasure.
You've been listening to Limitless, the Blind Beginnings podcast. I'm your host, Sean Marcellet. If you have a question or comment or a future topic request, send us an email to limitless@blindbeginnings.ca. And please join us next time.
This podcast has been brought to you by Blind Beginnings, an organization based in Vancouver, Canada, that supports children and youth who are blind or partially sighted, along with their families. Music for this podcast is composed by Sean Bishop and Clement Chow. Production and audio editing by Rob Minot. For more information about Blind Beginnings and the work it does to support children and youth who are blind and partially sighted, along with their families, visit us on the web at www.blindbeginnings.ca. And also remember to follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We thank you for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.